Hello and welcome. This is the first of a series of podcasts from the British Society for Haematology Lymphoma Special Interest Group. These podcasts will cover challenging areas within the field of lymphoma and will be released on a quarterly basis. My name is Shavir Musai and I am a haematology registrar working in Birmingham. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking to Dr. Wendy Osborne, a consultant haematologist at the Freeman Hospital, which is part of Newcastle-upon-Tyne Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust. Wendy has a special interest in the field of lymphoma, is a member of the NCRI clinical subgroups looking at high-grade Hodgkin and T-cell lymphomas, and is also the chair of the BSH Lymphoma Special Interest Group. Today, Wendy will be focusing on the treatment of early unfavorable Hodgkin lymphoma. She will address why this is a challenging area, the current approach to management, the current evidence base, and how our practice can be changed given the evidence. So without further ado, Wendy.
Thank you very much. And thank you for that introduction, Shavir. And I think that we are all finding early unfavorable Hodgkin more and more difficult to manage. And I think that's because we've got so many treatment options available. And we really do have to tailor our MDT decision for each individual patient. And that's in an MDT setting with clinical oncology input, as that is a huge part of the decision making.
Okay. So, Wendy, early unfavorable Hodgkin lymphoma, why is this an area of interest, or why is this a challenging area?
So, I think it's challenging because we know that we've changed our practice quite significantly in the last few years. Often in the UK, we would tend to manage this group of patients on an advanced stage protocol. And I think this was demonstrated in the RATHL trial, where more than 40% of patients were bulky stage 2 disease. And the more and more data that being published in the European trials have been showing that actually possibly we could manage this as early disease. But it's really important that we risk stratify the patients correctly. And we have, I think, the first point where it can be confusing is that we need to think about whether a patient is early favorable or early unfavorable. Of interest, the Germans are now calling this group early intermediate, which I think can be quite helpful for discussion with patients, because, you know, when you're putting that problem list at the top of the clinic letter, it's a bit distressing for the patient to see this early unfavorable term, even though we all know what we mean. So I am more and more using that term, early intermediate, and then I have my advanced patients. And there are slightly different risk scores depending on whether you are using an EORTC approach or a German approach. So for example, if using an EORTC approach, all patients over the age of 50 are automatically unfavorable. And it also depends on number of nodal sites. So it's slightly different between the EORTC and German. So I think it's really helpful to have the risk differences in stratification available for easy access for each MDT, so that you don't incorrectly classify the patients.
I see. So it really does help with that risk stratification. I mean, that guides your management essentially in this patient group. So does it matter which approach you use, or is each center sort of individual in what they use?
So I think that the good thing about Hodgkin lymphoma is we have such fantastic outcomes for our patients. But because of that, we really need to look at long-term risk for the patient. And the biggest question for me is, do I feel that there'll be more toxicity from an intensive chemotherapy approach, such as escalated beer COPDAC? In the UK, we tend to replace the procarbazine with dacarbazine to try and reduce toxicity and possible impact of fertility. Or is there more toxicity in the radiotherapy for that patient? And so I think that for a long time, many centres for this early intermediate group were using the 4 ABVDs and the 30 gray radiotherapy approach. And this was following the HD11 trial, a German trial showing an excellent outcome for these patients. Now, this was up until a few years ago, our standard of care. And it was interesting that the HD14 data were presented a couple of years ago. And this was another German trial where they randomized patients between the standard approach of 4 plus 30 and randomized them to what they called the 2 plus 2 approach. And this was 2 escalated Bierkopf, 2 ABVD, and then 30 gray radiotherapy. And they showed that there was a 6% progression-free survival benefit with this approach. And so for many centres in Germany, they moved to this 2 plus 2 plus radiotherapy approach as per HD14. Now, in the UK, I have to say that that was an approach that we, certainly in our centre, we chose not to use, because by this point, we had PET-guided approaches for this early intermediate group. And for me, the optimal management for most of the time for this group was following an H10 approach, which used a PET-directed therapy.
Okay, I see. So you've talked about the current approach in the UK and then the sort of HD14 trial. Is there any patient group which you might adopt this 2 plus 2 plus radiotherapy approach for in patients with early and favorable Hodgkin lymphoma?
Okay, so it wasn't including the radiotherapy. I didn't choose to start adopting the HD14 approach, even though there was that 6% PFS benefit. It was pretty equivalent to the H10 that we were seeing in our patients. So in the H10 trial, and it's obviously, there's so many different trials to remember, but this was probably, and still remains often, the mainstay of therapy for our early unfavorable patients. For the H10 trial, patients were first of all grouped into favorable or unfavorable. And if they were in the unfavorable group, all patients were given 2 cycles of ABVD. And then if they were PET negative, they were given a further 2 cycles of ABVD and radiotherapy. And the outcomes for these patients were excellent. So they had effectively a 4 plus 30 approach. But where the true benefit came from this trial was that we saw that there was a significant progression-free survival benefit in those PET-positive patients. So the PET-positive patients were escalated to escalated Bierkopf and they received radiotherapy. So they had intensive treatment. Only about 22% of patients were PET positive, so you didn't need to give Bierkopf to everybody. But by using a PET-guided approach, you could have either a 4 plus 30 or a ABVD escalated Bierkopf plus radiotherapy approach with good outcomes in all arms if you escalate those patients.
Okay, that's interesting. And toxicity profiles, were they significantly different?
So there is more toxicity with the escalated Bierkopf. And I think that, but we know that the PET positive patients in H10 who did not escalate had a PFS of only 77%. So for these patients, you then have to look at their risk of relapse and the toxicity associated with second line therapy, which is often high dose and an autologous stem cell transplant. So for me, this H10 approach is a really good approach, provided I am happy to give radiotherapy. And I think that this is where we have led into our big decision-making now for our MDT discussions. And this is since the publication of HD17. So HD17 effectively was using the German standard, which, as I said, was 2+2 plus radiotherapy, so escalated Bierkopf, 2 ABVDs and radiotherapy, randomized to 2 escalated Bierkopf, 2 ABVD, and then a PET scan. And it's really important to remember that that PET scan was done after the 4 cycles. So it wasn't an IPET 2, it was an IPET 4. And if patients were IPET 4 negative, the outcomes were the same whether the patients had radiotherapy or no radiotherapy. And this was the first trial where removing radiotherapy did not impact on the progression-free survival when considering combined modality treatment. So I think that this is a good approach if we really want to avoid radiotherapy. Now, the problem for me for this trial is that if the patient is IPET4 positive, so that PET scan after 4 is positive, which about 16% of patients were IPET4 positive, then even with radiotherapy, their 5-year progression-free survival was only 82%. So obviously that's fantastic for the majority of patients. So 84% of patients can avoid radiotherapy with this, you know, bulky, often early unfavorable disease in whom you really want to avoid radiotherapy. And even avoiding radiotherapy, these 86% of patients, their 5-year progression-free survival is 95%. So that's fantastic. But it does worry me about these 16% of patients who are IPET4 positive, who then get the toxicity of radiotherapy, but also they drop their PFS down to 82%. And as always, we can't pick these patients out up front. So for me, I have to say that I do an HD17 approach, but do an IPET2 scan. Because if their scan after 2 is negative, then I think the chances are that it's likely to stay negative after 4. So we can just go to that de-escalate to 2 ABVDs. I do repeat them, but the chances in my experience is that they are likely to remain negative. But if they are positive, then it gives me the option of keeping them on an advanced approach. So keeping them on escalated Bierkopf and keeping them on this HD18 approach. So because they're IPET2 positive, they would need 6 cycles. So again, we come back to that weighing up the risk and benefit of, is the toxicity of huge field of radiotherapy more than a total of 6 cycles of Bierkopf? And it will be different for each patient. But I do put in that IPET2 for my patients who I'm following HD17 approach, even though it isn't in the trial, to keep that option open for me so we can assess the risk and benefit for these patients.
Okay, so that's very well explained, Wendy. So, I mean, it shows you the importance of the IPET2, and most centres in the UK do have PET available, and it's probably, you know, it is very important in guiding management in Hodgkin lymphoma. And as you said, Hodgkin lymphoma, especially early stage, we do have very good cure rates, and it's all about trying to take patients to MDT and minimize toxicity. And you've touched on the latest evidence out there and how we can change our practice. You know, is there any other or current evidence which we're awaiting, or would you say that, you know, we sort of have, you know, early unfavorable Hodgkin lymphoma? You know, do you think there's anything else coming out soon?
So, I mean, I think the really exciting data for the future is about prognostic and predictive factors. And they're, you know, PET radiomics, circulating tumor, DNA. What would be the dream is picking out patients up front who are going to do badly, and then we can select that toxicity balance for the patients. So essentially now, when we are in our MDT and we have an early intermediate patient, so an early unfavorable patient, the first thing that we do is to make sure we've classified them in the correct way, depending on which approach. So we have those two, the German risk score and the EORTC risk scores, sort of as a list available in our MDT. I always forget it, I always have to just review it. But the main difference is age and number of nodal sites. And then we look straight to our clinical oncology colleagues and say to them, or they say to us, this is lung disease. So it might to me look like just a PET quite high up tumor. And I would hope minimal toxicity, but then they'll say, oh, but there's a really low epiphrenic node. We would have to give quite long field of radiotherapy. This patient's got X, Y, and Z risk factors, which is why I don't want to give radiotherapy. So it's easy if they say, I'm happy to give radiotherapy, because then we just follow an H10 approach. The outcomes are fantastic for an H10 PET-guided approach. Start everybody off on ABVD, two cycles, do a PET scan, and if they're PET negative, two more ABVDs, radiotherapy. If they're PET positive, escalate to Bierkop, two cycles, and give radiotherapy. The problem is when we have those patients, and unfortunately, in these early stage unfavorable, if they've got bulky disease or long mediastinal disease, quite often our clinical oncology colleagues would be worried about that toxicity. So then we have to weigh up how fit the patient is. So if I've got a young, fit patient who I have less worry about toxicity. Now, within this, we need to remember about fertility implications for patients, because we worry about the impact of fertility on escalated Bierkop. And we have to, escalated Bierkop DAC, we have to sort of be thinking about the risks for patients. So, you know, we can say to them, we'll start on an HD17 approach. So start with escalated Bierkop DAC. But we have to remember there will be 16% of the patients that we start with who will be IPET4 positive. So for those 16%, we have to be aware of that risk of going into this approach of either keeping them on Bierkop all the way through as an advanced stage protocol, or we have to consider that we'll be giving them two Bierkop, so they're getting the toxicity of Bierkop, and then giving them two ABVDs and radiotherapy if we're just doing that PET scan after four. But that, you know, is something to think about. And then the last group are those patients in whom I want to avoid radiotherapy, but I don't think they're fit enough for Bierkop, and I would not give Bierkop over the age of 60. I'm cautious giving it over the age of 50, and we admit our patients as per the German approach, even over the age of 40 for cycle one. We use a lot of GCSF and we watch them closely. So if they aren't fit enough for Bierkop, at that point, we've got the options then. I would start them on ABVD. And we know if they are PET negative, the patients in H10 who were PET negative, having six ABVDs, they had a fantastic progression-free survival. So that was still 90%. So I would be start them on ABVD. I do drop the bleo after two following the RAFL data. And I know that these early unfavorable patients who aren't fit enough for Bierkop, if they're PET negative, fantastic, just give them extended chemo. The problem is the patients that are PET positive, because then we have to weigh up the risk of, we can't escalate them. We've already thought that they're not fit enough to escalate to Bierkop. So do we accept the risk of giving them just six ABVDs with a reduced risk of disease control? Or because they're now in a higher risk group, do we say, okay, let's keep them on ABVD, but we'll consolidate them with radiotherapy? So all of these decisions are really individual patient based. We've got loads of data out there, but we need to think about how we're going to adapt it for our individual patient. And most importantly, we really need that expert opinion from our clinical oncology colleagues and our PET radiology colleagues, so that we can truly understand the field of involvement, the toxicity of radiotherapy, and then make our treatment decision to balance up that risk of escalated Bierkop versus that risk of radiotherapy versus that risk of relapse and needing second line therapy.
Okay, thank you for that, Wendy. So this, you've highlighted the importance of the MDT in managing this patient subgroup. And then, as you said, tailoring management, because every patient is different, and some patients can't tolerate radiotherapy or they can't tolerate things like escalated Bayerkopp. Just a last question here. If you had a patient who was elderly and couldn't even tolerate something like ABVD, what would your approach be in this patient subgroup?
That's a really excellent question, because I think that we have loads of data for our younger patients for Hodgkin, both in early and advanced disease, but our data for older patients isn't good. And there isn't a standard of care. I mean, the BSHSIG sent a questionnaire around a few years ago, and we all have a different approach for older patients with Hodgkin lymphoma. I worry about giving bleomycin to anyone over the age of 60. And so therefore, if they are older but able to tolerate an AVD approach, usually, you know, most patients up to 70, I would be happy to give AVD. Once they are over that age, then I think that's more difficult to tolerate. And I have to say, I'm now favouring Pam McKay's approach of ACOP, which is a modified Bayerkopp, and it's now published and presented at the BSH. We are collecting data rapidly. In an ideal world, bringing in novel therapies such as checkpoint or brentuximab earlier for these patients feels like a good option, and maybe that will be available in the future. But essentially, I try and get AVD in if they're fit enough. If they're not, I look at ACOP, and sometimes I would consider CHOP, standard CHOP. I mean, Kolstad has presented data on CHOP, and we're happy to give patients in their 80s CHOP. So that would be something I would consider.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Wendy. This was a fantastic insight into the approach to patients with early unfavorable Hodgkin lymphoma. You've discussed the challenges presented by this subgroup of patients, the current evidence base, and an approach to management. And again, you've highlighted the importance of MDT discussion and involvement of our clinical oncology and radiology colleagues. To our listeners, thank you so much for joining us today. And I'm sure this has been a very helpful insight into how to manage this interesting group of patients with early unfavorable Hodgkin lymphoma. Please do look out for future BSH lymphoma podcasts, which we are planning to release on a quarterly basis. Thank you.
Thank you very much.